This is BFBS,
the Forces Station.
Hatch and Gear's music special with Delamitri. Music specials. Hatch and Gear's music special with Delamitri.
That was Always the Last to Know. Now, Delamitri are a Scottish alternative rock band formed in Glasgow in 1980. And between 1985 and 2002, the band released six studio albums. Their 1995 single Roll to Me reached number 10 on the Billboard Hot 100. And globally, Delamitri have sold 6 million albums.
They're now celebrating the release of a new album called Fatal Mistakes. It's their seventh studio album and their first since 2002. We're thrilled to welcome Justin Curry and Ian Harvey to BFBS. Hello.
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 Hi.
Are you guys in the forces?
No.
No, but we are, well, we're harder than normal radio presenters, so if we can say that.
Well, we don't have to call you like captain and...
I'm Major Hatch.
You probably don't have to be very hard to be harder than normal radio.
That is very, very true. Thank you.
First of all, let's go way back to the beginning. How did the band get together?
Well, I was in a band at school, and were you in a band at school, Ian?
I was only in bands that played in golf clubs at school. That's good. Stevie Wonder songs in golf clubs.
My band played in town, sort of town halls and things like that.
Yes, and then that made your band a proper band. Right? I was an older band.
We had posters and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
so then what happened was the two guitar players that I went to school with, they went off to university, and I was left kind of with a drummer called Paul Tiagi and no guitar players. So I just, me and Paul, the drummer, put up little notices in music shops, which is what you did in those days before the internet and all that. And we got all these absolute idiots sort of applying, mainly older guys who wanted to be David Bowie. There was a lot of that going on. And we were just about to give up. And then Ian arrived, and he was completely different to everybody else that we met. He was, for a start, he had a brain. And he was really into the whole writing side, because our thing was we wanted to write with whoever we played with. So he was really up for that, and he had a Captain Scarlet badge on his jacket.
You remember
which
that was
quite
so
cool.
Clearly. I don't know why that's
so funny. It's slightly geeky, I'm not going to lie. But
Ian had been working on a farm, so we thought that was really interesting. And then we just said, look, do you want to come down on Sunday and we'll try and write a song? And he was like, yeah. So it just went from there, really. And we wrote our first song in the first rehearsal.
Okay. And where did the name Delamitri come from?
That was from when I was at school. We wanted to have a name like Dimitri's Daffodopoulos or something.
Really?
That sounded a bit like... Yeah, we wanted to sound like a nightclub singer or something. Look, it was post-punk. It was all a bit weird. And we just sort of... It just morphed into this. Originally, we were called Delamitri Rialzo because we found an Italian dictionary and we thought Rialzo was quite a good word, which means the cost of living. But then we realised that was a bit long, so it ended up being Delamitri. So it's just a meaningless... combination of syllables.
I can't believe after all this time you haven't got a better. You haven't come up with a better story for why you're called Delamitri.
Well, there's been loads of rubbish stories that they're like facetious stories about where the name came from. But
like what?
We used to tell those, but we kind of gave up on that. It seemed a bit.
There's a book somewhere that claims that it means of the womb in Greek, which it doesn't.
That's the Guinness Book of Popular Music. For some reason, there's a stupid thing in the Guinness Book of Popular Music that says that it means of the womb in Greek.
Wow.
But no, we never found a particularly scurrilous story that we could make stick. So we have to give you the boring answer.
Okay, well, we've had that now.
So if you think back to when you first got together, who were your biggest influences music-wise?
I was maybe listening to more sort of mainstreamy kind of things. I listened to sort of Free records and kind of 70s rock records, because I really liked the guitar playing on those. We didn't really try and write in that way.
Yeah, it's the same sort of stuff. I was really into The Fall. I was really into loads of Manchester bands when I was at school, like Buzzcocks and Joy Division, things like that. But what really kicked it off for us was, as Ian was saying, the postcard bands, Orange Juice and Joseph K, because they were in the music papers and they were kind of making Scotland cool, which it had never been before. I mean, Scotland never produced a kind of great beat group in the 60s, and it never really produced a particularly significant rock band in the 70s. So the postcard bands, Orange Juice in particular, were a bit of a revolution, and especially in Glasgow, you know, these really cool guys doing something really different.
So if we were to play an Orange Juice song, what would it be?
Probably Blue Boy, which is their second single, I think, which is really exciting. It's got a really exciting drum part, and that kind of captures the era.
BFBS.
The Forces Station.
Hatch and Gear's music special with Delamitri.
This is Hatch and Gear. We're all across the Forces world chatting to 90s legends, Delamitri. We're with Justin Curry and Ian Harvey. Justin, just tell us about the kind of heady days of the 90s. What do you remember about those days?
1990 kicked off with us having our first top 40 hit in the UK, and that changed everything really as far as what we were doing went. So all of a sudden, instead of a couple of hundred people at the gigs, there were thousands of people at the gigs. So that was quite, it was just a bit of a laugh actually. And the audience got a bit younger. And really from then on, we just toured and recorded fairly constantly until about 1998, I guess. And then it all slowed down a bit. It was just a frenzy of activity. I think mostly we remember it extremely fondly. We've probably blanked out all the bits where you're just absolutely knackered and you've got to get on a plane at 3 a.m. and go and make a video in New York and then go and do a gig that night and stuff like that, which you probably couldn't do now at this age, but when you're in your 20s, you just take it all in your stride. I remember it very, very happily. And also, we were never sort of famous, you know, so we didn't have all the hassle that came with being sort of famous and in the media. We were never in the tabloids or anything, so we just kind of got on with being a working rock band. And eventually, once you figured out that the way it works is to have people on the bus that you like. So by the time we got to like 92, 93, you know, everybody got on really well, and it was just, a lot of the time it was just about a party, to be honest.
Brilliant.
So whereabouts did you tour?
We did a lot in the US because we had several radio hits in the US. So sometimes we'd get stuck in the US for 3 months at a time, go home and do a European tour, then back out to America. And we did a fair bit in Germany and a fair bit in a lot in the UK and a wee bit in Australia in the early 90s.
Ian, were you caners kind of back in the day? Were you kind of drinking all night? Or were you the kind of band who'd go for a wimpy and then go temping bowling or something like that?
We were the former in the early 90s.
We did go bowling sometimes, but bowling usually involved drinking as well.
I think we did have a bit of a reputation with the record company, particularly in the States, as being pretty wild in that respect.
Without disrespecting Submariners, we always felt that touring, especially in America, was a bit like being on a submarine, except you get to get off the submarine every night and do a show and then back on. So you kind of get the best of both worlds.
I remember a long debate one night about whether do people drink on submarines? And at that time also, could they smoke on submarines?
No, I don't think so.
No, our tour manager phoned the Pentagon and got through to the PR department. We heard him say, look, we're just phoning to ask, can you smoke on submarines? And the person at the Pentagon said, no, sir, you can't. Put the phone up.
Good one. Like that.
I just wondered if there was a moment which you can remember where you were like, we've made it.
Nothing ever happens, we sort of started climbing up the charts.
Yeah.
And then there was specifically a show that we did in Ayr Pavilion, which is not a particularly glamorous place. We were already booked to do a British tour and it became apparent that Nothing Ever Happens was going to be a sort of top 40. And it did end up being a top 20 hit, which is a single, which is a big, big deal then. And suddenly, like Justin says, there was thousands of people at the shows which we just hadn't had before. That pretty much happened overnight.
Don't take this the wrong way, but a lot of your songs are quite miserable lyrically. why is that, do you think? Is that just more interesting to write about, Justin?
That's what people usually say. It's definitely, it's not that it's just more interesting, it's very hard to write about happiness, I think. I'm not really good enough to do that. That's a tricky thing. Leave that to Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder. And also, we listened to quite a lot of country music in the 80s, and a lot of that is very lacrimose and, you know, kind of beer-soaked and tear-soaked. And we took a lot, I took a lot from that. You know, Lyle Lovett and Steve Earle, a lot of those things are quite narrative and they're usually about heartbreak, or a lot of them are about infidelity, so I used to use that theme quite a lot. It just gives you a story and something to hang the song on, so I just find it a lot easier. There's got to be a bit of sadness in it. I mean, even really celebratory songs, if they've got a minor chord in there somewhere, it always helps.
Well, we can't not play Nothing Ever Happens, so here it is.
Post office clerks put up signs saying position closed. And
And secretaries turn off typewriters and put on their coats. And janitors padlock the gates for security guards to patrol. And bachelors phone up their friends for a drink while the married ones turn on a chat show. And they'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow. Gentlemen, time please, you know we can't serve anymore. Now the traffic lights change to stop when there's nothing to go. And by 5 o'clock everything's dead, and every third car is a cab. And ignorant people sleep in their beds like the dope white mice in the college lab. And nothing ever happens, nothing happens at all. The needle returns to the start of the song, and we all sing along like before. And we'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow. Telephone exchanges click while there's nobody there. The Martians could land in the car park and no one would care. Closed circuit cameras and department stores shoot the same movie every day. And the stars of these films neither die nor get killed, just survive constant action replay. And nothing ever happens, nothing happens at all. The needle returns to the start of the song, and we all sing along like before. And we'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow. Products that nobody needs. While anger from Manchester writes to complain about all the repeats on TV. And computer terminals report some gains in the values of copper and tin. While American businessmen snap up Van Goghs for the price of a hospital wing. Nothing happens at all. The needle returns to the start of the song, and we all sing along like before. And nothing ever happens. Nothing happens at all. They'll burn down the synagogues at 6 o'clock, and we'll all go along like before. And we'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow.
The Forces Station.
Hatch and Gear's Music Special with Delamitri.
You're listening to BFBS, The Forces Station. We're Hatch and Gear, and we're chatting to Justin and Ian from Delamitri. So I just wanted to find out who you met along the way when you were kind of in your heyday. Was there any like massive artists that you were a bit blown away about meeting?
We never really met anybody, apparently because we didn't do very many opening slots. We were generally just headlining and doing clubs and theatres and in the States. For some reason we bumped into three members of the Partridge Family in the same week, which I thought was quite odd. We met, yeah, and then at the end of that week we did a benefit. I think it was like an earthquake benefit.
It was
something.
A flood benefit.
Flood benefit. In was that Pittsburgh? And
no,
the host was David Cassidy. And he was really charming, actually, David Cassidy. He was really sweet. He came into our dressing room. We kind of hung out for a while. So we thought that was quite a coup, meeting three members of the Partridge Family. It might even be a record.
I think that might be. I don't think anyone has met more members of the Partridge Family. It sounds like some very strange dream with David Cassidy kind of walking in as well.
Yeah.
Part of it.
Just to go back to something Justin said, we didn't really have celebrity status. We didn't really hang out in those kind of circles. It was just bands that we played with. I mean, like R.E.M., and we did a support slot with the Stones and... So you sort of kind of could say you'd met those people, but Only in a professional capacity.
I think that counts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you started to get a bit of success, did you move away from Scotland? Because I was just thinking probably London was the heart of the music scene, wasn't it, back then? Did you stay put in Glasgow? What happened to you?
Well, in the 80s, partly because of those postcard bands, a lot of the record industry people would actually come up to Glasgow or come up to Edinburgh, Glasgow and Scotland to scout talent. So in actual, by the time you got to the mid-80s, you didn't have to move to London anymore. That was a kind of thing of the past.
So if you could go back to a time and relive a moment, what would that be?
Well, that's a really difficult question.
I'd quite like to go back. We played at Glastonbury way back in, oh God, 1990. And I get a bit overwhelmed by it. I get a bit overwhelmed by the substances I took before I went on stage, and I didn't think they would have the effect that they would. And I remember that being the set being a total disaster, because by halfway through the set, I had absolutely no idea what was going on or why I was up on the stage. So I'd quite like to go back and redo that. I always felt that was a bit of a faux pas.
That's what you're supposed to do it,
A moment you're supposed to really. I was thinking you were going to say meeting the three members of the Partridge Family again. I thought that was a moment.
I mean, I would like to have stayed in Australia for a bit longer, because the 1990 tour, we had to rush home because we had a single coming out in the UK. But quite a few of us really loved Australia, and I'd quite like to have spent a few more weeks exploring a bit of the interior.
Can I ask you about Roll to Me? It was, of course, one of your big hits. Was it about a specific girl that you were trying to get close to? What was that about? Because it sounds like you were trying to get quite close to her and trying to put her off her boyfriend. What's going on there? Who was that?
Yeah, no, that's just makey upy, that one. That's not based on any person living or dead. That was just a tune that I just stuck some cheesy lyrics over. And it didn't take very long to write, which often seems to be the case with things that get in the radio. It took me 3 months to write that song, and nobody's playing that one. That one took me 10 minutes. But it doesn't matter, does it? It's just the way they come out.
I don't know if you know this, but it's a well-known fact. As radio presenters, we love that track because it's really short. So if you need to fill for 2 minutes, it is off and on just before the hour of going up to the news.
Well, we think that's why it stayed on the radio in America for so long, because for exactly that reason. It didn't occur to us when we made it that it was that short. We just knew it was very fast.
Yeah.
The weird thing about that song was we mixed it kind of Beatles style, so we panned everything really hard left and right. So the bass and the drums are on one side and the guitars and the vocals are on the other side. And then quite a few times we noticed that a lot of stations were just broadcasting one side of the signal. So sometimes you'd be sitting in a van driving across a bit of America and your song would come on and there was no vocals.
Oh, no.
So we had to hurriedly phone up Bob Thurman and he'd mix the album and say, you better do a mono mix of this because only half the bloody song's going out. So we got that sorted pretty quickly.
Well, let's stick it on. This is Roll to Me.
Something wrong and you can't put your finger on it right then. Roll to me. And I don't think I have ever seen a soul so in despair. So if you want to talk the man through, guess who will be there? So don't try to deny it, pretty baby. You've been down so long you can hardly see. When the engine starts and it won't stop raining, it's the right time to roll to me. Roll to me. Roll to me. And I don't think
wrong guy, the wrong situation, the right time to roll the meter, the right time to roll the meter, the right time to roll.
Hatch and Gear's Music Special with Delamitri.
BFBS,
The Forces Station.
This is BFBS, The Forces Station. You're listening to Hatch and Gear, and this is a music special with Delamitri. We've got a new album out called Fatal Mistakes. We're with the founding members, Justin Curry and Ian Harvey. Ian, this is one for you. Which is the song that gets audiences most excited? I suppose we would call it your Ya Ya Ding Dong song. What is your Ya Ya Ding Dong song from Eurovision?
Well, I mean, our Ya Ya Ding Dong songs are often the slow acoustic things. Like Be My Downfall is a tall crowd pleaser, but it's hardly Ya Ya Ding Dong. Roll To Me would maybe be the Ya Ya Ding Dong song if we could play it sort of consistently and effectively on stage, but it always goes, it's got a tendency to... Yeah, it's a bit of a struggle to play that one.
So why is that? Why can't you play it?
It's really intricate, and so we tended not to put it in the sets. Would that be a Ya Ya Ding Dong song? I don't know. I'm not finding this conversation straightforward. Ya Ya Ding Dong. it seems so far away from anything that we do that I can't really quite.
What about you, Justin?
Get my head around it.
Well, you kind of never know because it changes from crowd to crowd sometimes. Sometimes, weirdly, a new song will go down a storm, you know, and with one crowd, and then you play again the next night in Newcastle or somewhere, and it goes down like a lead balloon. So it's very unpredictable. But yeah, Ian's right. We always play Be My Downfall. We used to play it last a lot, and that always... And that's quite a weird thing, because it's one of those songs that couples tend to canoodle to, which always struck us as a bit odd, because the song's about somebody who's about to step out on their spouse or on their betrothed. So it's quite, we saw these people smooching away to a song about going away with somebody that you shouldn't be going away with.
Look, I'll try not to be too fangirly here, but you guys were my first ever concert, okay? So in 1995, I saw you support REM at Cardiff Arms Park along with Cranberries. Oh. Uh-huh. And so I was literally 16, and I don't know why. Excellent. But I went on my own to this concert.
Wow, good for you.
I know. So my dad had got me a press pass because he worked in the local newspaper. And I think I was just, I literally can remember it now, and I'm 41 now. And
it was a good gig, though.
It really was. Absolutely incredible. Do you remember the concert and also staying around to watch the other acts?
Yeah, I remember watching most of the acts, actually. And REM are very gracious hosts to the other bands on the bill. So, you know, they had a big catering area where everybody was hanging out. So it was a very social atmosphere. And I think for that reason, I think all the bands really enjoyed doing that gig. And it's a really nice stadium for music, actually. Some stadiums sound awful. Hampden's a terrible stadium for music. But that venue just really worked. I think we watched most of REM's show, and then we had to go to Blackpool to do the big breakfast at stupid o'clock the next morning. So unfortunately, we couldn't hang out. REM did invite us to a kind of after-show thing, which we couldn't go to much. See, that's one of the things we'd like to change.
Why didn't you go? That's so annoying, isn't it? I know you had that. You should have just pulled an all-nighter, surely.
We had to drive to Blackpool and get up at... we did stay up all night, I think. And get up at stupid o'clock and then wait around for hours and hours and hours, and then we got shoved on just as the credits were rolling.
Oh, amazing.
No, annoying.
That was a really iconic stadium show for me. So I don't usually like those kind of things. We've done things. We did a couple of things with Bon Jovi that were just a bit irritating. You may not want to.
I want to hear about that. Tell us why Bon Jovi were irritating. I'm intrigued now.
They were running loads of tracks as well. They were the first band that we saw that had banks of recording equipment, so you didn't really know what was real and what wasn't. But as Ian's saying, REM were just... It was just... four guys and one extra guitar player, I think they had. So everything coming off the stage was generated by the musicians. That doesn't really happen so much now. There's an awful lot of technology involved in live shows, which we completely eschew. So we do everything. There's nothing coming off a sequencer or off tape when we play, which means the mistakes are real as well. Yeah.
So that was the REM Monster Tour. If we were to play an REM song for you, what would be your favourite?
Oh, I would go for Don't Go Back to Rockville from the second album.
BFBS.
The Forces Station.
Hatch and Gear's Music Special with Delamitri.
This is BFBS, The Forces Station, and we're Hatch and Gear, and we're chatting to Justin and Ian from Delamitri. Time to talk about your new album. So it's your first album since 2002. Where have you been?
I've been watching the telly.
I've been... Well, I brought up a kid. That's enough to do in 20 years. So he's 19 now, so he was born just at the end of the touring thing. And so that's filled most of my time.
So which one of you guys said, hey, let's get the band back together? Who said that?
Justin always blames me, but it kind of... We were asked to do some live shows, and that was the kind of original catalyst. And then... Yeah, it just kind of grew from there.
I don't blame you. I credit you. No, I mean, I did. I thought eventually the phone would start ringing again, and people would want us to do shows. So I wasn't majorly surprised when a few promoters came sniffing around in the early tens, I should say, and offered us a couple of things. So that was a catalyst. The initial catalyst was promoters saying, "Well, you could do a couple of nights at Hammersmith Odeon," and that was quite an appealing thing to do, so that's what kicked off.
Are you interested to see who your audience is now? Because actually the 90s has had a bit of a resurgence, hasn't it? So you might find you've got, you know, the kids of the, you know, the parents that used to listen to you, and now the kids are coming along too.
Yeah, we spotted that in 2014. I think that's quite a common thing where people grew up listening to their parents' music or being indoctrinated by their parents' record collection. So yes, a small percentage of those crowds were late teens, and they were sort of generally down the front looking very happy. So that was quite inspiring. But our audience was, our audience was always about 4 or 5 years younger than us, just about. Yes, the further we got into doing the gigs, the older the kids got, if that makes any sense. But there's something quite... it's quite heartening, that, actually.
Tell us about the new album then. So it's called Fatal Mistakes. What's it all about?
You tell me.
You can't get out of it that easily.
Well, we wrote a lot of songs for this, and we just focused on the things that we felt fitted what Delamitri mean to people and what they kind of expect us to sound like. So we kept it pretty tightly to that format of two guitars, bass and drums with some natural kind of keyboard things. You know, there's not many synths on the album, if any, actually. It's all just piano, organ, two electric guitars or an acoustic guitar, bass and drums. So that format was, that template was quite important for it.
And what I was thinking is that your voices still sound fantastic. I mean, have you been singing in between to make sure you've still got it?
Well, your voice changes a lot as you get into your 50s. So you have to sing vowel sounds a bit differently. It's all a bit weird. Yeah, you've got to keep yourself vaguely in trim. But you just don't know. The older you get, your voice really surprises you. Some nights you feel like you're 25, and other nights you really feel your age when you're singing. There's no telling. So it becomes a bit less predictable, your voice, as you get older.
Yeah. Are you going to be touring the album? Tell us about that.
Yeah, we will, hopefully. I mean, we've booked a bunch of shows that starts around the beginning of September. Yeah, we were booked to do that obviously 2 years ago, I suppose, and that's still on the schedule. But we start in Cardiff on the September the 8th, and then there's shows on and off right through pretty much the end of December.
That was Delamitri with their new album, Fatal Mistakes. Thank you very much, Justin and Ian. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Much.
It's been absolutely fantastic to talk to you. And it's time now to play a track from your new album. This is It's Feelings.
Come in. surprises, 'cause it's feelings that cut you, and it's feelings I can't bear, but it's feelings that put you there, put you there. Try to make some sense of why you can't see straight. Put you there. While the world goes past like a pantomime behind the glass. Takes like the rain. It's just feelings
that cut you.
It's just feelings
that put you there.
It's just feelings.
BFBS Original Music Specials.
On air, online, on the app,
on FM,
and DAB Plus throughout the UK. This is BFBS.
BFBS.
The Forces Station.